I believe we are joined, are we, by Chris Black. Are you there, Chris?
Good to be with you again.
Hey, it's good to be talking to you. One item I was going to mention, Chris, at the top of the show, when I'm sure you were watching it, it's very apropos of your work, in my opinion. You've been writing about the issue of war and peace and how to avoid conflict and the responsibility of leaders to work on that subject rather than on conflict. Cuba was recently visited, what was it, 2 weeks ago, by Russian warships. A couple of them came. I think it was submarine. And on the very day, or the moments after, a Canadian ship, military ship, sailed into the same harbor, which is famous for an incident that caused the war, and parked themselves near the Russian ships.
Right.
And the country scratched its head, and the leader of the opposition, Mr. Poilievre, said, what are we doing, you know, in that communist country and being nice to them at this moment, critical moment? And then the answer from the Liberal Party, and Mr. Blair, was, we're monitoring them because they're in our neighborhood, and we're showing them that they're not welcome. And, you know, it seems to me the Canadian public should have all blinked and said, that's a very dangerous place to be. And who the heck is running the place? Because, well, I guess I'll start you off with a question. Was it the decision of Mr. Blair protecting our neighborhood, or was it somebody else's decision to send the Canadian ship, do you suppose?
Well, the official Canadian position, as I understand it, was that ship, that small, it was less than a frigate, more than a minesweeper. But it was agreed upon that was months ago that was going to be there to celebrate, I think, the 30th anniversary of Canada establishing some sort of relations with Cuba.
Mm.
So it was already scheduled. It just happened to arrive at the same time the Russian flotilla appeared in Havana. But, of course, they exploited it and tried to make it look like there was a show of force by sailing that small little boat into Havana Harbor next to the Russian ships. And I don't think the Canadians allowed Cubans to go and visit. Maybe they did. I don't know, because the Russians allowed visitors on their ships.
Apparently they went ashore and they had a band in Havana.
Right.
Played some song.
And of course the Americans sailed a killer submarine into Guantanamo Bay to show, that was a definite show of force in response to the Russians appearing there on the illegally held Guantanamo base they have there. So yeah. It seems that it was already ordained that ship was going to visit there, but they've exploited that. Both parties have exploited that to say, well, what Poilievre is saying, why are we being friendly to the communists? Because, well, what can you say about that, man? And the liberals, because they want to look like they're showing force for the Americans. So. But it's definitely not a peaceful
it really
reaction.
It really underlines your recent work and activity. You've been attending conferences. You were at one in Belgrade. And the subject was, I like the title of the meeting that you attended in Belgrade. It was, I think, was it Equality of States or Nations? They worked.
Right.
They had the right word in that title.
Yeah, the conference in Belgrade was organized by what is called the Belgrade Forum for a World of Equals, which says basically what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was organized by that forum in Serbia, along with the World Peace Council and other groups which supported it. But it also follows on, I attended a conference in Vienna in September on the same subject. The subject was responsibility of international actors and how to make countries who commit crimes responsible, or even in the economic sphere. And that was attended by people from different countries. It's arranged by Hans Kirkler of the International Progress Organization, who's a conservative but anti-imperialist sort of conservative in Vienna. And he was the one that wrote the report on the Lockerbie trial saying it was fixed by the CIA and MI6 a long time ago. But the conference in Belgrade was to commemorate the NATO aggression against Yugoslavia in 1999 and the attack on China that year, because they bombed the Chinese embassy and killed several Chinese in that attack. And it was attended by a large number of people from many countries in the world, from South Africa to Russia to China to Latin America, Europe, even the States. In Canada, of course.
That underlines the role of media as an enabler and assistant to power, imperialist power. These things, they're not reported.
No.
Highly competent and representative figures attend these conferences and say things that are important. And there is a uniform blackout of that information here.
Right, because the Belgrade conference was attended by Chinese press, Russian press. I think there was some German, French press there, there's some British, but there was no. I didn't see any reporting on it anywhere, except my article. I didn't see anything.
The Globe doesn't
the local
have
Serbian
a roving.
Press, otherwise, it was totally ignored.
Well, you're, and of course, you presented a paper there, and
right.
I want to tell our listeners that you provided me with the summary of the resolutions of that meeting. We would like to publish that on our Taylor Report Facebook because it should be read. It's wonderful to just have the points laid out of the how.
Yeah, they call it, it was called the Belgrade Declaration. It was really written by Živojin Jovanović. I was part of the committee that drafted it, but he was the main drafter. He was a former, he's a president, he was a former foreign minister for Yugoslavia, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a point made there, and you make it extensively in your paper, that NATO, and that, this was Canada, and as a matter of fact, today's Globe has a kind of self-congratulatory photo story about those who flew missions in over Kosovo. And they did. They came back and did a flyover so that everybody could see our warplanes that had been bombing Kosovo, and it's in today's Globe. But they're all very proud of themselves, but your paper says that was not a UN authorized mission, and this is a NATO is an organization that goes to war.
That's right.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we made a point of saying this was neither, they say in this declaration, it was neither a little Kosovo war, but rather a war of aggression to achieve certain political, geopolitical goals. And the attack on Yugoslavia was completely illegal, of course, and it was an outright aggression against a European country, following on several years of trying to break it up through civil wars and sanctions and setting the various republics of Yugoslavia against each other, creating civil wars in order to break up Yugoslavia, in order to break off Kosovo from Serbia, install Camp Bonsi, which is the biggest base they have in Europe, as a means to encircle Russia on its southwestern flank, as Hitler had to do in 1941. Before he could invade Russia, he had to take care, knock out Yugoslavia on his rear flank before he could do that, and that's what they did. And that's what the purpose of that was. It was a part of the step for the first phase, or one of the phases in the end of the step, expansion of NATO, for the attack, the ongoing war against Russia, which is taking place as we speak, and against China and Iran and everybody else.
I recall that New York Times reported that Helmut Kohl was talking to two reporter and others, and he said, "This is the first time since World War II that we have been able to say Sieg Heil with openly."
Right.
"And be proud of it."
Yeah, well,
time.
We saw...
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it's just disgusting. I mean, we saw this with the parliament, every MP in parliament, and Zelensky and the German ambassador clapping for an SS, cheering an SS man, soldier in the Canadian Parliament. One of the most
Germany was not supposed to use warplanes outside of Germany, right?
That's right. Well, in that case, in Germany, that was the one of the first moments where Germany threw off the chains of the restrictions placed on it after World War II because of its aggression, and actually took part again in aggression against Europe. And now it's involved against aggression against Russia, threatens other countries. They're supporting Israel. They're against Iran, and so on, and even China now. So, and the Germans are talking about placing ships and bases in the east to confront China. So, yeah, that was one of the first steps of breaking the prohibition of Germany being an aggressive state. That was all dropped, with American support, of course.
It's troubling, isn't it, how easily, once they lift the veil, it's gone.
Right.
And you underline...
Well, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
You underline in your paper that NATO should not have been permitted to come into being.
Yeah, in my opinion, because one of the... when the Russians or Chinese, well, the Russians especially, complain about the expansion of NATO east after the Red Army pulled out of Eastern Europe, in the expectation that NATO would not step in to those areas which were left by the Red Army, but and were promised that they wouldn't. That's why the Red Army left. Otherwise, they would have not. Mm-hmm. They broke that promise and have been aggressive ever since. So,
but also, even the formation of NATO.
NATO. So yeah, NATO.
There is a UN charter, and as I understand reading your paper. It was one of those things of, should you call it out and try to stop it, or should you just, you know, accede? But it really is a violation of the UN Charter, the formation of a military bloc.
Right, because when the Russians complain about the American expansion of NATO, the NATO states, and they say, well, these states, European states, have the right to choose whether to join NATO or not. Well, they do not, in my opinion. That's what we come back to. My legal opinion is they do not have the right to join NATO. NATO has no right to exist under the UN Charter. It's a negation of the UN Charter, because the UN Charter states under Chapter 7, that the UN Security Council is the only arbiter of what should be done in the case of a threat to international peace and security in the world. Only them. But immediately after, 3 years after the UN was formed in 1949, the Americans cobbled together a military alliance which purports to say that it has the right to decide when to go to war or not, thereby bypassing the UN Security Council, and in fact negating their own obligations under the UN Charter. So none of those nations that joined NATO were legally doing so, because it's a violation of their obligations under the UN Charter to follow what the Security Council says. Now, they do have in the UN Charter a lip service in Article 1, which says we have to listen to what the UN Security Council says, but of course that's always ignored. Mm-hmm. And they purport to be able to decide to go to war on their own decision, bypassing the UN Security Council. So no nation has a right to. That's a misdescription, and it's throwing dust in people's eyes about what NATO really is.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we should remind listeners that the year was 1999, and that decision and NATO's behavior had a lot to do with altering Russia's position viewing the West. They had gone through what they thought was a little honeymoon, and we're all going to get along.
Right. Well,
that odd episode. Do you remember that strange episode where the Russians showed up first?
Yes. Yeah.
In,
the airport,
was it Kosovo? And the Americans almost shot at them.
Yes, they did. It was a confrontation. I think a British general sort of rose, calmed it down. But even in Russia, that operation by those Russian military units, there was almost a rogue operation, because it was against, from what I understand, speaking to Russia, it was not something that Yeltsin approved of, but they did it anyway, because the commander on the ground decided they have to do something to help the Serbs. But the reason that NATO was able to attack was because Russia was weak. Under Yeltsin, it allowed the Americans to do anything and really oppose it. And in fact, the only reason that Yugoslavia surrendered on June 4th or 5th or so of that year, because up until those 3 or 4 months of bombing, they had not touched the Yugoslav army or air forces, really. They're causing extensive civilian damage of infrastructure and heavy bombing of civilian targets. But they had not defeated Yugoslavia. And Yugoslavia could have still carried on the fight, but just a few days before the final surrender, the Ahtisaari, who got the Nobel Peace Prize, a man from Finland, and Chernomyrdin, who was Yeltsin's foreign minister at the time, came as emissaries for the Americans to see Milosevic and several officials and told them this message, that if they did not surrender, the Americans had the intention of carpet bombing Belgrade with B-52s from high altitude, and that they would kill 500,000 Serbs in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that was their choice. So Milosevic took that to Parliament and said, what do we do, carry on the fight or surrender? They voted to surrender. Because that
and he was
so
rewarded
they were threatened
with
a major act of terrorism. Do this or else. So they collapsed.
Well, that, by the way, that leads us to another aspect of your work and writing, because there was a new phenomena that played a role in all this that you speak of, which is the creation of UN Security Council. I think you use the word, what, affiliates? But they created a ad hoc tribunal, and it was headed by a trusted political operative called a lawyer or judge, Arbour.
Right.
And she told him, that she said, you cannot negotiate with Milosevic because I am bringing charges. He's a war criminal, so
yes,
you can't talk to him.
Exactly. That came up, and that happened because when the bombing was going, I think the first 6 weeks, the NATO was losing a lot of planes. I think over total, they lost like 140 planes shot down, including 6 Canadian planes, I'm told, by Yugoslav generals, but that's not mentioned here. They were suffering heavy losses and many more damaged, and they couldn't land ground forces in Yugoslavia successfully, though they tried. So they were desperate, and the French and the Germans, and the French were never really on board with this attack. Some French officers actually landed and surrendered their planes so they didn't have to bomb the Serbs. There was a lot of unrest in France and Germany about the attack, so the Germans and French were seeking negotiations, that it should be a negotiated peace. To stop that, Madeleine Albright ordered Louise Arbour to lay charges against President Milosevic, labeling a war criminal, and then said in a press conference with Madeleine Albright that you cannot negotiate with war criminals. And that stopped the moves by France and Germany to seek some peaceful resolution. So the war continued.
Yes.
So that's what Louise Arbour did.
But what, when you think of it, and it is well outlined in your papers, by the way, we do have the... your paper to that conference, is that available somewhere online?
Yes, I have it. It's found on New Eastern Outlook. I can also send it. It's posted there at New Eastern Outlook, that paper. And it's called Peace in Our Time, Complete and General Disarmament. Because when they asked me to attend, and I wasn't sure I could attend, but when I finally was able to, they wanted me to speak about, well, everybody to speak about how, what solutions there could be to achieve security and peace in the world, and well, what can you say except a lot of platitudes. I wasn't sure what to say, but I was looking around for a theme, and I ended up finding the proposals by Khrushchev and John Kennedy in 61, 62, that there'd be complete and general disarmament. And
which they agreed to.
Which they had agreed to. Well, yeah, Khrushchev, I think
these are two leaders talking to each other,
right,
and protecting the world.
Right. I think it was first
That's
proposed
ancient
in
history.
Belgrade a year before at the Non-Aligned Movement proposed it at a meeting, a conference in Belgrade, I think in 60, 61, or 59, I can't remember which, somewhere around that period. Non-Aligned Movement had a meeting, and in that meeting they called for complete and general disarmament. Khrushchev followed up with a long speech, almost 20 pages long. It's fascinating to read, quotes Victor Hugo and Hawthorne and everybody else. call and very emotional, passionate call for disarmament, that without it, we're all going to destroy each other. Jack Kennedy gave a speech in 62 or 61, a famous speech in which he also called for complete and general disarmament. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, there's almost a dialogue going on, and then the Soviets put forward a draft treaty on complete and general disarmament in 1962. And I found that by chance. I got it on the UN site, but then I went back to find it, and it was disappeared. I couldn't find it again. I finally found it on an old internet site. And it would make people weep to really read what that says. Mm-hmm. Because they warn of the dangers of nuclear war and of war itself, and that the only solution is complete and general disarmament, that every nation in the world would have to disarm and only have enough arms for local internal security, and would not be able to raise taxes or funds for any forces which could be used outside its own borders. And they had this over a four-year period with five concrete steps. It's simple, it's workable, and they proposed the creation of an international disarmament organization to accomplish that.
Now, by the way,
it's been ignored, and I tried to revive it, but nobody seems interested.
I think it's you did us a great service by finding those speeches. People don't know, one of the breakthrough moments of Jack Kennedy was he did give a speech in which he said, let us acknowledge the role of the Soviet Union in the defeat of Nazi Germany and the toll it took on that population. And he spoke of numbers and real statistics, which to sober up American opinion, to get them off the idea of nuclear blackmail.
Right.
And
he said that the weapons of war must be abolished before they abolish us. And that's basically what Khrushchev was saying. So we had that, there was that will back in the 60s, especially after the Cuban Missile Crisis, to eliminate weapons of war. That's not spoken of now. There's a lot of things about against NATO, but there's no call for general disarmament. I just thought it would be a good idea to try and revive that campaign. But it seems
that's why Gore Vidal has that memorable line that it's the United States of amnesia.
Yes, very.
It didn't even happen.
Nope. Well, like their president, it seems to be these days, like it never happened.
That's embodied now by Biden. He actually has amnesia.
Right.
That probably helps.
Or they have false memories of what happened.
He's
both.
The perfect guy to lead.
Dangerous.
He doesn't remember a thing.
No.
Now, what was going on there, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but is America had gotten, you might say, intoxicated with the idea that they were going to have full spectrum dominance. Mm. And this is 1999. They targeted the Chinese embassy in Belgrade. And I, at the time it happened, I said to myself, they're trying to rub their nose in it. They're trying to say, you too, right?
Right, yes. Yes, it was a warning to China. We're coming for you next. And you don't dare touch us. We can do this to you and you can't do anything back. They launched five cruise missiles at the Chinese embassy. Four blew up. I think the fifth failed to detonate.
They also carried out another crime there, in my opinion. They knocked out communications. They knocked out television, radio, right? Which is, I understand, is a war crime.
Yeah, they did all that. They attacked hospitals. They blew up chemical plants, polluting the air and the rivers and streams. They attacked bridges where people were standing on defying NATO planes. People forget this. I met a young woman who was on one of those bridges. You may remember during that period, many thousands of Serbs went on the bridges across the Sava and Danube rivers in Belgrade, daring the NATO planes to bomb them while civilians were standing on those bridges, but they bombed them anyway. I met a woman who was a child at that time with a mother, and the NATO plane attacked, launched a missile at the bridge they were on, killed her mother and everybody else. She survived. So I met her. She was still very shaken up by that and traumatized by that. So for the Serbs, that's just yesterday. For us, it's like ancient history, but for them, it's yesterday. And for
ancient
Russians,
history,
too,
or perhaps didn't even happen.
Or it didn't even happen. The same as the Crocus attack. I mean, the Crocus terrorist attack in Moscow happened when I was there, and the feeling the mood among the Russians, because there were several Russian ministers there and government officials, and Chinese as well. I went to a couple of meetings, and the mood was very, very dark, very angry, very deeply sad. And the whole, everything, I spoke to a lot of Russians who spoke very good English and were asking, what are you people doing?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
Yes.
Why do they think like this?
Well, on Canada Day,
everybody
that's a
knew
good question
from the
for
Western
us to ask.
Press coverage that was arranged by the West. So. And yet nothing said. When I got back here, I saw hardly anything about the Crocus attack, except it made the whole theme was that it made Putin look weak, so it was obvious. That was the headlines in all the Western press the day after, and so the Russians knew that was organized, and that was to make Putin look weak.
Just a phenomenal thing. I mean, here we go also with, it's expressed in the D-Day exercise where they get together and congratulate each other, and Russia is not invited.
No.
The Germans are invited.
Yeah, the Germans are invited, but not your allies. Oh,
not
it's
the
like,
ones
well,
who
again, we go
them.
Back to them, you know, cheering an SS man in Parliament who was killing our allies. He belonged to the SS, which Canadian troops fought against and died fighting, and yet they're cheering this man whose units killed Canadian soldiers. This is how disgusting and degraded Canadian politics has become under the master in Washington, because there's no independent thinking here. Nobody thinks. They just react, and they do. I mean, it's a criminal what they did.
Absolutely bizarre moment. It hasn't even been a year since that happened.
And it's forgotten. People don't think. And people excuse it. Well, they didn't know.
Yes, and by the way, I would say to them, all right, you didn't know, so you don't belong here, do you? You did not know who our allies were in World War II. You actually,
right.
So you shouldn't be in Parliament. Actually, you should be.
No.
I don't know if you should be employed. But
yeah, there wasn't one MP. I've heard people say, well, a lot of the MPs didn't know. I said, well, did you see any MP stand up while everybody was clapping and put their hand up and say, excuse me, why are we clapping for this man?
Right.
Nobody.
Yeah.
They all joined in enthusiastically.
Or remain sitting or walk out.
No, nobody. Every single one of them, every party.
It's called moral courage.
No, as far as I'm concerned,
you know, you have the lemmings, the lemming phenomenon. Oh, everybody's standing. I better stand up.
Right.
And then you have people with actual fortitude and integrity, and they say, I'm not standing for that. What's going on?
No, but it's not forgotten in Russia. I mean, Putin has, if you follow his speeches, he's raised that event several times and shown that video several times.
Well, how
times.
Could they forget it? I mean, it's an unspeakable stupidity.
Yeah. Exactly. And then the Crocus attack and what happened on a beach recently in Sevastopol, however you pronounce it.
Yeah. Well, that
confirms their view that they're under attack, and therefore it's actually hardened the position from speaking to people in Russia instead of softening it.
Yeah, we have to clean out the famous stables, I'm afraid, and it's gonna be heavy work. We're speaking to Christopher Black, international criminal lawyer. He's represented the accused before the international tribunals. And you just to underline this, you made the point of that actually the so-called opening up of democracy or the correcting of situation in the Balkans, et cetera. It was actually aggressive and meant to take territory. And there's a military base that nobody ever talks about called, is it Bondsteel?
Yeah, Camp Bondsteel. I think
who,
it's now
who authorized that? And how did they get away with that?
Just by NATO walking when Milosevic was forced to surrender under this threat of bombing Belgrade. The NATO troops immediately walked in and occupied Kosovo and split it off from Serbia. And it's the heartland of Serbia. They split it off, occupied it, kicked out Serb Yugoslav forces, handed it over to the KLA, the Kosovo Liberation Army, is sort of fascist, ultra-right Islamic sect, which was conducting terrorist raids, including with Osama bin Laden under American Army command during that period.
Yeah, people forget
him.
Our old pal.
And then they built. They began building Camp Bonsier, which is now the biggest base, I think, in Europe, even bigger than Ramstein.
It is a U.S. base, right?
Yeah, it's a U.S. base, what goes on there. It's huge, and it's obviously, we mentioned in our thing, it's obviously used as a base to support the southwest flank of NATO against Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're building more in Romania now. I think they're now building a new base in Romania. So the move to war, general war, is increasing. I hope it doesn't go that far, but they don't stop.
And
I think even if the Russians win in Ukraine, which seems likely now, with the way things are going on the ground, that won't be the end of this war. The Americans intend to try and carve up Russia no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, if I think it's a misunderstanding about NATO that it is it's an encroacher, and it pushes. I was recently, of all things, reading the memoirs of General Grant, and he objected to the war where the annexation of Texas and the Mexican North, and he said he was just a lieutenant, but he said we were there to provoke a war. He said it. We were there to provoke a war, and then he said, "It's easy to provoke a war."
Yeah, yeah, he was correct, and they ended up taking over half of Mexico war, and that's what they intend to do. They've openly stated that the Atlantic Council and all these think tanks in the States have said they want to break Russia up into 35 different pieces, and then hand it out. I'm sorry, I wrote an article or a recent article called "Secret Treaties." I can't prove this, but logic dictates that. The reason the European countries and the rest who support this war against Russia continue with it, even though they're suffering economically and losing big economically, why do they continue this war? There must be secret treaties that, if they succeed in breaking up Russia, they're all going to be given a piece of the action.
Yes,
that's being agreed upon, so they're all hoping for something bigger at the end, which makes it worthwhile. Otherwise, why would they continue this war?
Again, as Christopher Black, I urge you to go online, by the way, and find all of Chris's writings and talks. And we're going to make the some of this available at our Facebook page, Taylor Report. Chris, you're arguing, of course, for a phenomenon that Bertrand Russell and others pointed out is rather hard to achieve. And maybe it was Maynard Keynes. Maynard Keynes said that... Russell said that the way to solve the problems of the world is through being rational. But he said the reason he was saying that was because the world is irrational.
Right.
He said he has a problem. We should be, I hope you agree, we should be trying to reach the Canadian people to assume their responsibilities for their own security. And this involves having to engage in dialogue with all parties, does it not?
Yes, and you're right. But they don't engage in dialogue. And Canada is a very strange... It's almost surreal or insane what the Canadian government is doing. We're against China. In Iran, they just label the IRCG as terrorist group. I mean, it's crazy. But against China and Russia particularly, because they're nuclear powers... We have a country which has almost no armed forces worth speaking of, which is kicking both China and Russia in the shins, physically attacking Russia in Ukraine, and as if we are totally protected. And we're not. If Russians decide to hit China, there's nothing we could do to stop it. And yet we are this little pipsqueak country kicking these big powers in the shins and not expecting them to strike back at some point. Well, they will. And this is, it's absurd that they think because the Americans are there that somehow they're protected because the Americans aren't protected. If those Russian ships, the Admiral Gershkov in Havana, armed with Zircon missiles, hypersonic missiles, can hit Washington in 1 minute, nothing can stop it. And the Russian submarine with same missiles, nuclear ones, if they launched, they would destroy the United States and nothing could stop it and Canada. And yet they still go on thinking that they're immune, that nothing's going to happen. And this is the danger we're in. They don't understand deterrence. They don't understand the real possibility of destruction. And this is what they're leading us down to. And the Canadian people better wake up before it happens. Otherwise, it's going to be too late.
Well, your paper addresses this matter of that where Freeland, or whoever she is, says that we have an umbrella, a nuclear umbrella, which seems like an odd metaphor, but we don't have any say over the use of the umbrella.
No.
I seem to recall that was Diefenbaker was under the impression that if the NORAD was going to be call up planes in emergency, he would have first be notified. He found out that they had called them up and then notified him.
Yeah.
So
right.
And even now, thing like that ought to be meditated on, right? Pardon me?
Yeah, the Americans control everything. We have no control. But even if Freeland is thinking that she's relying on the American nuclear deterrence umbrella to stop the Russians or the Chinese from attacking North America, she's completely wrong, and she doesn't know the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no air defense against these new Russian missiles. None. They can't be stopped. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Russians have already put their Sarmat system online, and it's on alert right now as we speak. It's sailing on immediate alert.
Mm-hmm.
They can be launched in seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And that missile can travel around the world, and nobody can dodge any other air defense system. Nothing can stop it.
Yeah. Now,
there is no air defense in North America worth the name.
Now, you're advocating a United Nations that actually does its job, and the UN does address this, and there are countries, and I assume the old Bandung group, non-aligned, who are putting forward a nuclear disarmament plan or to discuss it, and Canada says they're not interested.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's right, and they do that because under American instructions, no doubt, because America's not interested in any treaty restraining them. They want to they're now testing, talking, and maybe they are testing nuclear weapons again underground. I've seen reports, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, Trump is proud he tore up the agreements, and Biden and his gang have left them in torn up condition.
Yes. Right. So the Russians and Chinese know that the Americans have aggression on their mind. And that's what they're intending. And they're now trying to form, as North Korea just said, they're trying to form a new NATO, an Asian NATO alliance against Russia, China, and North Korea, which is why President Putin has now made this military alliance with North Korea, which also has a military alliance with China, and they're all linked together. So an attack on one is an attack on all.
Mm-hmm.
So an attack on North Korea brings in China and Russia. An attack on Russia brings in North Korea and China, and on Iran. So we're dealing with a situation in which World War can break out just like that.
Yeah. Now, let me
the Americans push too far.
As a kind of a last note on this point, you were in Europe. You've talked to Russians, Chinese. You've also yourself visited North Korea. You have a sense of these populations and their leaders and what they're saying. But it seems to me one message that has not registered here, because everybody has their fingers in their ears. After the attempt to implement the Kiev Agreement, where the Russians said, look, we had an agreement. I believe France and Poland were the guarantors. You all just laughed at us and ignored us when we said we have to implement this in order to avoid conflict. But you didn't. You just ignored us. Now, we do not trust you. And we are going to go about our business as we see fit.
Right.
And isn't this the problem that here they actually think we could shrug off that language? And because they've said we're tired of being insulted, we're going to now move the furniture ourselves.
Right. The mood when I spoke to especially since the Crocus attack, they now realize that, as far as they're concerned, there is no hope in the West anymore. There's no hope of peace and reconciliation. They think the Europeans, the Americans, Canadians aren't interested whatsoever in peace. They want war. And so they're preparing for war. And they're carrying on the operations in Ukraine, which are Well, the Ukrainian army is on the back ropes now and is collapsing as we speak. So that becomes dangerous because then what are the Europeans and Americans going to do about that? Mm-hmm. And we don't know. But the conventional response is almost impossible. They don't have enough forces for that, so that leads to nuclear war. That's a danger. Russia, Putin's being pushed by hardliners to become more aggressive. Many people in the street, from what I'm hearing, want him to be more aggressive and launch attacks and start shooting down American planes over the Black Sea, which are giving intelligence to the Ukrainian forces.
People ought to be reminded.
He's trying to stop. Yeah, he's got the larger picture. He's trying to fight a war, but tread a fine line and not have a nuclear war. And then we see the Americans are also walking this fine line because Austin phoned the new defense minister, Belousov, a couple of days ago and had a talk after the American ambassador was given a lecture by Lavrov because of the attack on Sevastopol. And we were warned. And so Austin got obviously nervous and phoned them and said, let's cool things down. So they keep pressing, but they don't want to go towards the precipice. But they're walking towards it like they're blindfolded or deaf and dumb, like you say, despite the fact that some of them don't seem to want to, but others are pushing to keep going. And this is very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Well, your writing is very helpful in all this. And you point out Canada has to look after, protect its own sovereignty. It should actually be interested in its own sovereignty.
Yeah, we don't have any patriots in this country that I see. I mean, well, you. I mean,
well, we have American patriots.
People in the leadership. There's no patriots. We're in the leadership that we see anywhere in any of the parties.
We're all worrying about
an independent policy. No,
right. We're all worried about who will be our next president.
Right. Yeah, we're all worried about who our next president is going to be. Exactly.
Christopher Black, you've done a great job. I'm really glad you attend these conferences. By the way, people ought to understand takes courage to do that and to speak up. And we look forward to more of your writing. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, you're welcome. It's nice speaking to you again.
Okay, Christopher Black. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM.